Welcome to today's edition of the Rush Limbaugh Show podcast.
And thank you, Johnny Donovan. It is wonderful to be here with you on the Rush Limbaugh Show. Our phone number is always 800-282-2882. And it is so wonderful to be here. I guess technically this would be the Northern Command that I'm doing the show from. Now, I am from WBT in Charlotte, but I'm here at the EIB Northern Command in beautiful New York City. I'm actually able to see all the great people that I've gotten to know over all these years that I've gotten to work with forever. And we're certainly enjoying our time catching up. But one thing is for certain, over the course of the next 3 hours, we will break down all these huge stories that are out there. And no story is bigger right now than Joe Biden's first foreign trip. Oh, I mean, you want to talk about a cupcake. That's what they call the easy-to-win football games, a cupcake. You start out against an opponent, or you start out in a situation that is a guaranteed W on the trip. Joe Biden going to Europe, going to the G7, and then talking to Vladimir Putin, that is a cupcake. In fact, how confident is he that he knows he's got this thing done? He goes right to his strength. Joe Biden's first foreign trip, telling the military that our greatest threat is climate change. Now, it's funny because a couple of weeks ago in Tulsa at the memorial, it was white supremacy that was the greatest threat facing America. But now I guess it's climate change. I don't know which one it is, President Biden, but the president was speaking to U.S. soldiers yesterday.
We must all commit to an ambitious climate action if we're going to prevent the worst impacts of climate change, limiting global warming to no more than 1.5 degrees Celsius, lead the global transition to clean energy technology. You know, when I went over in the tank in the Pentagon, when I first was elected vice president with President Obama, the military sat us down to let us know what the greatest threats facing America were, the greatest physical threats. This is not a joke. You know what the Joint Chiefs told us the greatest threat facing America was? Global warming.
Now, come on for a minute. Stop right there. Global warming is certainly a major concern. It is certainly something we ought to be thinking about. But the all-time greatest threat to the world, to us? And don't try to tell me, Mr. President, that the first time you went into the tank was when you were the vice president for Barack Obama. You went into the tank long ago. Long, long ago. You've been in the tank since like 73. You didn't just go into the tank in 2008. But I understand what you're saying. It is incredible to see this. They always go back to the natural being, and that is to play to the heartstrings of the base. And the heartstrings of the base dictate two things: systemic racism and, of course, global climate change being the greatest threat facing us and facing our military. You know, it's incredible. Rush talked about this very thing way back just after Joe Biden first went into the tank. He said Obama thinking global warming is a bigger threat than anything else, too.
Here is Obama. This was this on the BuzzFeed website. Editor-in-chief, there's a guy named Ben Smith. I think he used to be a Politico and started his own news website called BuzzFeed. And he's talking to Obama. And, you know, by the way, this is a little side observation. You know, Obama goes out and talks to these little buddies, is it Vox? This former Washington Post guy, Ezra Klein, sets it up. And it really is a bunch of kids, ultra-extremist left-wing kids, young millennials. And, I mean, they are the young leftist idealists. And they're talking to Obama. And Obama thinks he's at home in the family room, which he is. The last thing that's going to happen when he talks, either BuzzFeed or Vox, or pretty much any of them. But, I mean, these are really, this is hero worship time. And when he was talking to Vox, that interview with Vox is what's gotten him into all this trouble with ISIS. A bunch of different guys conducted the interview at Vox. I think it was Matt Iglesias. It was Iglesias who asked him about ISIS, and Obama thinks he's totally at home and he's relaxed, and that's when he came out with all the, well, you know, they're not really terrorists. They're just a bunch of folks out there. They're backyard criminals and side street criminals and so forth. And it was an interview with a friendly place that blew up. And, of course, the guys at Vox, they're happy as they can be that it caused Obama a little trouble because this is attention for them. But they got the answer they wanted. The point is, these are ultra-left-wing little idealists, and Obama gave them what they wanted to hear on a number of issues about Republicans, about conservatives, and about ISIS, and about Islam. It's no big deal. They're not really that big a threat. Global warming's a bigger threat. It was that interview where he said this. And these guys think they've hit a home run here because Obama articulated exactly what they believe. But in the process, Obama actually stepped in some quicksand in a friendly interview. I find that delicious.
What's incredible is that global warming is the cause of and solution to every political problem out there, especially if you're a progressive. It's remarkable because if you go back to the ISIS issue, the ISIS flare-up, remember, it was Marie Harf who was at that time John Kerry's spokesperson at the Department of State, who said that the reason why ISIS had formed was because of climate change and global warming. It was drought. They were all finished because of drought, and that's why. And the Syrian civil war occurred because of drought, and the Arab Spring became what it was because of drought. So you know what I'm going to predict right now, and I who knows if it'll come true, but I'm believing it's probably going to come true. At some point, Joe Biden is going to say the coronavirus, COVID-19, is the result of climate change. We're having these increasingly deadly strains of gain-of-function modified, deadly strains of viruses coming out of the woodwork and the caves and the bat cave, came literally out of the bat cave. Quick, call Commissioner Gordon. And, you know, you're sitting here and you're saying to yourself, wait a minute. The global climate change isn't the cause of every problem on the earth, because if it were, in fact, the cause, there's really no way to fix it. I mean, you're just being a fatalist at that point. Look, if Joe Biden or Barack Obama or Kamala Harris or any of these folks really believe that climate change was the systemic threat of all time, and especially if you are Joe Biden going to talk to the military at Mendenhall there in the UK and talk about, give them a lecture on climate change, then we've got to have electric F-35s. We got to have charging stations for the F-35s. We've got to go to a zero emission military. We this has to be done. We have got to figure out how to do a zero emission, no carbon footprint military. And you know what the answer to that is? Very simply, nuclear. Don't try them. But that's how these folks get tripped up with these talking points. So everything is climate change. And we know that this is the case. It is the beginning, the middle, and the end of the entire identity of the liberal movement in America today and for always, going all the way back to Ehrlich, going all the way back to Silent Spring and Rachel Carson. It's always the climate. The most well-regarded people in all of liberal politics are the climaticians. The people who run around talking about climate, that's the only thing they care about. In fact, it's bigger even than systemic racism, because you know that. Because on the first major speech that President Biden gives on the world stage in what is a cupcake game in England, he goes to say that the greatest threat is clearly climate change. Progressives, they will die on that hill, rhetorically speaking. I don't want to imply that there's any kind of violence or any of that sort of stuff going on. But progressives will gladly die on that hill. Look at the fights that are happening inside. Politico's got a piece. Progressives draw a red line on keeping climate provisions in infrastructure bill. Tom Malinowski, congressman from New Jersey, got busted on a Zoom meetup with a number of his constituents just a couple of days ago, talking and saying, listen, these provisions in the infrastructure bill, they're really slated towards climate. They're a climate thing. You got to understand how important this is. They will jettison almost any part of their entire agenda for climate. Now, what I worry about is, as Joe Biden spends his time with these G7 members, you know, you're talking about the obvious countries, right? You're Germany, you're France, you're Italy. Of course, you're the Canadians, England, those folks. They're going to eat that thing up. They're going to love the idea that he's talking about climate change, because it plays right into their European cultural guilt that they have, that they're responsible for the destruction of the entire planet because of their first world policies. But what he's telegraphing to Putin is that, hey, if the president of the United States of America says climate change is the greatest threat facing us, he's giving us a pass. We get to continue to do what we want by militarizing the Arctic, because the Arctic is melting. We get to do all these sorts of things that are out there that the U.S. isn't going to talk about unless it's connected to climate. We can station missile bases. We can get more aggressive in our overflights. We can do any number of things. And as long as we check exactly two boxes, nuclear deals and climate change, the U.S. is going to leave us alone. Why, think about the rank hypocrisy here. Joe Biden greenlit the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. That is transiting fossil fuels from Russia into Europe. The same fossil fuels in natural gas that they have condemned. Once again, Joe Biden is on every single side of the argument. He told us a lot when he told us that in 2009, he went into the tank with Barack Obama to get the briefing from the Pentagon. And I know that the tank is a reference to a location you go to get the briefing. But I also understand that Joe Biden is telling us a little bit about himself, that he's in the tank for anything and anybody that will advance his career. 800-282-2882. I'm Brett Witterbull, your guide host today on the EIB Network. And I am Brett Witterbull, your guide host today on the EIB Network. 800-282-2882. Our phone calls are beginning to come in, and we'll certainly take those in due course of the program. Arizona Congressman Andy Biggs told Fox News that despite claims to the contrary by the Biden administration, the border, the southern border, that place that Kamala refuses to go, the border remains open and the cartels and traffickers are the ones benefiting.
Don't ever forget that most Democrats campaigned for president on an open borders policy. So this is what an open borders policy looks like. Don't forget, a lot of these people still owe cartels money, so they're going to be placed in kind of an indentured servitude to cartels throughout the country. You've got more drugs being seized than ever because more drugs are crossing than ever and getting into the country. And also, you've got the sex trafficking and the human trafficking that's going on. If you want to be humane, you close our border. There's probably five or six things that they could do that could get this border under control in about 2 weeks' time, and they won't do it.
What's incredible is we heard for 4 years that kids in cages. But what we have happening now is absolute nonsense coming from those same Democrats, AOC, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, Kamala Harris, the usual sort of suspects that would run around telling you about the kids in cages. They care about kids in cages, but they don't care about kids in bondage. And that's what human trafficking is. It's slavery. You're in bondage and you can be a child. You can be a man. You can be a woman. You can be any of those things and be in bondage, be held essentially against your will until you do enough forced labor or sex work to pay off what you owe the coyotes and the cartels. Andy Biggs knows that. He's right there in Arizona, all the way across the country. In Florida, Carlos Jimenez, who's a Republican from Florida, said this about Kamala Harris.
Kamala Harris didn't have to go to Guatemala to figure out what the root cause was. All she needs to look at is look at herself and the president. That's the root cause of what's happening at the border.
Now, Rush talked about this, and he did it extensively and eloquently, discussing the notion of immigration, the mosaic versus the melting pot.
So listen to this. New York Times, immigration bill provisions gain wide support in poll. Then the 6th paragraph, the nationwide poll did not ask respondents about the immigration bill itself. Instead, it says in the 2nd paragraph, taking a pragmatic view on a divisive issue, a large majority of Americans want to change the immigration laws to allow illegal immigrants to gain legal status and to create a new guest worker program to meet future labor demands, the polls found. People are pragmatic. See, you people all of a sudden have become pragmatic. Well, no, you're not pragmatic. You and I are not pragmatic. The rest of the country is. We're all yahoos. People support an abstract. This is, you know what? You know how meaningless it is? You know how they go out and ask these generic party preference polls for Congress races? You're planning on voting Republican? And they do it for the presidential race. You're planning on voting Republican or Democrat or the next presidential race? Throw a name in there, throw a couple names in there, and it changes the generic ballot all hell. Same thing here with this abstract poll. They have not run a poll on the bill. They haven't even run a poll, as they claim, on attitudes. That's what they're claiming here. They have run a poll on liberal talking points. The New York Times piece mentions illegal aliens now rather than undocumented workers. I don't know what that means. Their style book is hard to figure out. In the long run, will today's immigrants make American society better or worse, or will they have no overall effect? Better question would be, kill the long run, and just say, will today's illegal immigrants make American society better? It's key when you leave out the word illegal. If you're going to take a poll on what's at stake here and you leave out the word illegal, your question's meaningless. Today's immigrants? Everybody thinks immigrants, legal immigrants, improve the country. Most people do. This is how these sneak snakes do this. The most loathsome and meaningless and dishonest question, I think, in the CBS New York Times poll, do you think that most recent immigrants contribute or cause problems? Isn't about immigrants. It's about illegal immigrants. The real question, do you think that most recent illegal immigrants contribute or cause problems? It's about illegals. It's not about legal immigration. And the New York Times has the audacity to pass this off as somehow accurately representative of the American people. It's a joke.
The way the culture is molded is by controlling the language. And Rush has told us that dozens and dozens and dozens of times. The greatest and most efficient way to change the language is to do it through the media and to do it through the university system. It's important to go back to the root causes. That's what we kept hearing from Kamala Harris and President Biden. Well, sure, that's true. We should get back to the root causes. We should understand what the root causes are. I know what the root cause is. You know what the root cause is of illegal immigrants coming to the United States. They were told by Biden and Harris that it was okay. And not only told that it was okay, it was codified as an executive order. And that executive order is entitled Executive Order on the Revision of Civil Immigration Enforcement Policies and Priorities, signed by Joseph Robinette Biden on January the 20th, 2021. You can look at it. It's posted on the White House website. And in this order, which is a very short order, the borders are now open. Here, Section 1 policy. Immigrants have helped strengthen America's families, communities, businesses, workforce, and economy. Notice they say immigrants. Sure, we agree. Immigrants have done those things. Infusing the United States with creativity, energy, and ingenuity. The task of enforcing immigration laws is complex and requires setting priorities to best serve the national interest. The policy of my administration is to protect national and border security, address the humanitarian challenges at the southern border, and ensure public health and safety. We must also adhere to due process of law as we safeguard the dignity and well-being of all families and communities. My administration will reset the policies and practices for enforcing civil immigration laws to align enforcement with these values and priorities. That's President Biden's own order. So what is it that he's rescinded? What is it that he has reset? This is what he reset. This is exactly, specifically what he reset. Because President Trump's order was clear as a bell. President Trump's order was enhancing public safety in the interior of the United States. That's Executive Order 13768. And do you know what it had in there? It had enforcement priorities. In furtherance of the policy, I hereby direct agencies to employ all lawful means to ensure the faithful execution of immigration laws in the United States against all removable aliens, meaning illegal aliens who were here committing felonies, crimes, what have you. A, having been convicted of criminal offenses. B, having been charged with any criminal offense. C, having committed acts that constitute a chargeable criminal offense. D, having engaged in fraud or willful misrepresentation in connection with any official matter or application before a government agency. Lying to the feds. Having abused a program related to the receipt of public benefits. All are subject to a final removal of order, but who have not complied with their legal obligation to depart the United States. Those six things were specific actions taken by President Trump to enforce immigration law. What does the Biden order do? It revises it. It cancels it. It tells the world, we're open for business. If you can get here, you can get with us. That's what Biden-Harris did. These are provable facts that can be read by any seventh grader. It's an incredible bit of theater that has been crafted and created by the media and the Biden administration to try to blame it on climate change, hurricanes, violence, and corruption. In reality, it's their own desire to have open borders. I'm Brett Winterbull on the EIB Network. When President Biden signed the executive order to revise and get rid of the enforcement provisions of the Trump executive order as it related to illegal immigration, that was only the first of two devastatingly awful executive orders that he would put into effect in that very first day as president of the United States. The second one was the destruction, the wholesale destruction of jobs when it came to the Keystone XL pipeline. Now, CNN reporting, developer pulls plug on Keystone XL pipeline. The developer of the Keystone XL pipeline announced on Wednesday that it is pulling the plug on the controversial project after the Biden administration revoked its permit in January. This is devastating, not just for our energy independence. It is certainly that. But whenever you wipe out an industry or you wipe out a sector of that industry, you wipe out jobs. And those jobs, as we heard from Joe Biden over the years, jobs is a four-letter word, right? It's a four-letter word. It is in this case because these are energy jobs. That is the forest of the four-letter word jobs. And you look at this and you say, okay, what is the trickle-down effect on people who live in those communities? Well, you're not just putting pipe fitters and engineers and laborers out of a job. You are putting out of a job all the other businesses that are attendant in that community. So you have a pipeline coming in. Now you kill the pipeline off because you're Joe Biden and you have the power to kill off a pipeline. What other jobs are you going to lose? You're going to lose hospitality, restaurants. You're going to lose fitness centers, what have you. All of those things. Trisha Burns and her husband are business owners. And they opened a fitness studio called Ignite Wellness in anticipation of the influx of workers coming to the area of the Keystone XL pipeline. Following Biden's inauguration was a rude awakening. Trisha Burns, who's the owner of Ignite Wellness Studio and is also a rancher, said this about Joe Biden killing the pipeline.
And then the executive order started coming in. And when he signed the bill to pull the permit, it was a tough, tough moment here at Ignite.
That same day, 45 people canceled their memberships. That's 45 people who said, well, we're going to have to leave. Remember the heartstring tugging stories that Joe Biden told us when he was out on the campaign trail and at the debates? The empty chair at the table, but also his personal experience of seeing his father have to move out of town to go find work. It's the toughest conversation you can have with a child, to sit them down and let them know you've lost your job and that you're going to have to move. It disrupts lives. Disrupted Joe Biden's life, but he doesn't care about the 45 people or Trisha Burns or her husband out there in flyover country. Couldn't be bothered, couldn't care less about what happens to those people because he's bowing at the altar of climate change. Now, Nebraska Governor Pete Ricketts said in an emailed statement that the decision hurts Nebraska taxpayers and keeps the U.S. dependent on foreign oil. President Biden's executive action led to the termination of the Keystone XL pipeline. This is yet another example of the Biden-Harris administration putting the priorities of radical environmental activists above the national interest. Without Keystone XL, the United States will not only be more dependent on overseas sources of oil, but our state will not enjoy the benefit of jobs and property tax revenues the projects would have brought. Now, back in 2013, Rush took a call from someone about the Keystone XL pipeline and why it was a no-brainer.
Malcolm, South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I wanted to ask you, since the government report on the Keystone XL pipeline has come out, and it said that it would have basically no effect on climate change, do you think Obama will quit stalling and approve it, or find some other way to kind of avoid dealing with it?
Who said
that approving the Keystone Pipeline will have no impact on climate change.
I can't remember whether it was the EPA, but there was a report that he had been waiting on.
But it was some government agency that said that?
Yes, sir.
They're waiting for a review from a government agency on whether the Keystone Pipeline, which is simply shipping oil underground or maybe overground in a pipe, would somehow affect climate change. And somebody came back and said there will be no impact. How big of them? Look at what. Here, the answer to your question is that's a joke and a faulty premise to begin with. There is no man-made climate change taking place out there, Malcolm. But the bottom line, on the Keystone Pipeline, Obama, what I've heard is that he's open to it in exchange for a carbon tax. That if Congress will agree, which means the Republicans in the House, if they will agree to a brand new carbon tax, then he might consider authorizing the Keystone Pipeline.
Well, carbon tax is no good for, the reasons you already stated.
Well, a carbon tax is just going to slow the economy down even more. It's just going to take more money out of people's pockets big time. I mean, energy, the discovery of oil and its many uses is what propelled massive economic advancement, technological invention and improvement, and anything. You know, somebody had a great question the other day. If taxes on carbon reduce energy use by design, Obama wants us to reduce our use of carbon-based fuels because they cause climate change and global warming. So if taxes on carbon reduce the usage of energy, what do income taxes do? Well, by definition, they reduce income. And income tax reduces income, makes people poorer. I think that the thing here with Obama and the Keystone Pipeline is absurd. Here's a chance for energy independence. Here is a chance for cheaper, domestic, refined energy. As I say, less dependence on imports, and he's opposed to it on the grounds that it somehow is dangerous and is going to add to climate change. This Keystone Pipeline is a great example, by the way, of the whole idea that this administration is not devoted to improving things in this country. Because that's a no-brainer in anybody's world. The Keystone Pipeline's a no-brainer.
And the
but
thing,
not in his.
And the thing that you have to note is that it's a pipeline, which means when you consider what could be used instead of a pipeline, trucking, even rail, you have a much more efficient, cleaner way of delivering the energy. It's more efficient than trains. It's more efficient than trucks out on the roads. It's a pipeline. But that's not going to be a problem now because Joe Biden, stroke of a pen, kills the jobs. It's absolutely heartbreaking. How about some good news? Pure Talk makes cell phone plans for families like my own. Four of us, all with cell phones. And until Pure Talk, there was no alternative except an expensive cell phone plan. Now Pure Talk offers $30 per phone for unlimited text, talk, text, and 6 gigs of data. That's every month. And if one or more of us goes over on the data, well, they won't charge us for that. Some families are saving as much as $800 a year. Rush spells it all out.
Hey, folks, you know, you can spend all kinds of time deliberating what kind of cell phone you want to own, what kind of cell phone you want to use, but you might spend 10% of that time deciding on your cell phone carrier, if that much. Now, maybe you spend more than 10%, but really, there are options out there you may not know about. Cell phone service has become expensive. You know, I remember back in the days of flip phones. This is before 2007, before the iPhone was invented. The theory was that your service was going to be given to you as long as you paid for the phone. That's the way the experts thought the trend line was, that service is going to be pretty much free, but you got to pay for the phone. Now that's turned upside down. Now the phone costs a pretty penny, as does service. Cell phone service has become expensive. The big brand name carriers charge a lot because, well, they can. So there's another company out there that we want to suggest you look into called Pure Talk, because their focus is on providing you the best cell phone coverage and service for about half the price of the big brand names in cellular service. Pure Talk gives you excellent coverage. It uses the same cell towers as one of the biggest brands. You get unlimited talk, unlimited text, 6 gigs of data for about $30 a month. It's on the same tower that you're probably using now, same towers. And if you go over on your data usage, Pure Talk is not going to charge you for it. Switch to Pure Talk. Keep your phone number just as it is. Pure Talk will help you make that an easy switch. From your cell phone, just dial #250 and then say Pure Talk. #250 and say Pure Talk, and you'll save 50% off your first month. That is #250 and say Pure Talk. You'll have the option to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message from Pure Talk. Something to look into.
And it is the Rush Limbaugh Show on the EIB Network. I am Brett Witterbull. Let's go out on the phones and check in with some of our great listeners out there. We start off in Cape Coral, Florida with Chris. Welcome to the program, Chris.
Hey, Brett. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
I just wanted to talk about the border for a minute. I know we just had a GoFundMe account for AOC's grandmother, which raised like $90,000 or something like that.
Yes.
Why don't we do one for Kamala Harris and do a GoFundMe so she can get to Europe?
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Hold on. I know she's complaining that she hasn't gotten to Europe, but wouldn't the play be to fund her on a trip to the border, to pay for the trip to the border, since she's obviously reluctant? We'll get her an all-expense-paid junket to the border between Mexico and the... Why are we sending her to Europe?
Well, from the sounds of it, I tend to think that Europe is probably a little higher on her priority list. So maybe if we can cross that off the list, she can find her way to the border next.
All right. I'll take that under consideration. I think that's well within the margin of error, and we can certainly run that. Let's go ahead and run that through the computing equipment back there and see what's going to give us a greater percentage chance of her actually going on the trip. Obviously, she's going to want to go to Europe. What if we convince her that to get to Europe, she'll fly across the border? We'll do something like that. Kurt is in St. Paul, Minnesota. Kurt, welcome to the Rush Limbaugh Show, the EIB Network.
Yeah, I was just wondering, if climate change was such a threat, why doesn't Joe Biden stay in his White House basement like he did during the campaign and video chat to these world leaders? Kamala Harris could have done the same thing for what she got accomplished going to Mexico.
Well, here's the thing. Biden wants to go and be adored. And outside of the Democratic caucus in Washington, D.C., there's no place he's going to be more adored than Europe. I mean, Europe loves Joe Biden because he comports with everything they believe. Career politician, doesn't have any specific expertise, expert at spending money, even throwing good money after bad. And of course, he is a fully embraced climate changer. So there is no way he's going to miss this and do a Zoom call. Now, he might do a Zoom call to somebody that doesn't rate. He might do a Zoom call with Bibi Netanyahu. He would do a Zoom call there, and then he would disconnect midway through the call and act like it was a glitch. That would have been something he would do. But when it comes to giving up the accolades, you don't ever give up those accolades. You can't. The accolades are mandatory with this sort of thing. You want to be celebrated and feted. And those are two different things. You want to go to the Europeans and you want them to fete you and to celebrate you and tell you how it's different. How many times do you think you're going to hear him over the next 3 or 4 days say, America's back? America's back. We never went anywhere. We never went anywhere. We were here the entire time. That's how you got the Abraham Accords. That's how you had an actual dialogue instead of a shooting war with crazy Kim Jong-un. It's how you got negotiated, you know, deals on NAFTA and other things. And you had China paying tariffs. That was America being very present in the world. America being back. Maybe he means America's going back. We're going back. We're going back where we were before. A country apologizing for its greatness and wealth. And we're going to do our best to reduce that greatness and wealth. Or my name isn't Joseph R. Biden. Hal in Belle Isle, Minnesota. Hello, Hal. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
In line with my initial thrust is, what do we as individuals, citizens of the United States, how can we control a lot of what goes on in Washington? As an example, your last two callers were hitting on the mark.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Joe Biden is going to Europe.
Yes.
And yet he wants the accolade.
That's right.
So what is he also going to get out of it? He's going to get money. The way his son went over and got money. The way he went over to Ukraine and got money. And that's what's going to happen when Carmela goes to Venezuela. She's not going simply to say, I've come to find the problem. She's coming to say, I've got a checkbook. How much is it going to cost?
Let me jump in here, only in the interest of time. I'm going to tell you what Joe Biden's in pursuit of by going to Europe. He's in pursuit of the Iranian nuclear deal, but it's not about the Iranian nuclear deal. And I don't even think it's about the money. Joe Biden is very jealous of Barack Obama's Nobel Prize and the fact that Donald Trump was often discussed as a potential Nobel Prize nominee. He was nominated by a couple of people for his work in the Abraham Accords, those peace deals over there in the Middle East. Joe Biden knows he doesn't rate. He's not in that list. He needs to do whatever he can. And if it means selling out America in pursuit of international accolades and awards, he's putting that at the top of his list, even before money. I'm Brett Winterble, your guide host today on The Rush Limbaugh Show on the EIB Network. And I am Brett Winterble, your guide host today on the EIB Network on The Rush Limbaugh Show, 800-282-2882. Phone number to catch up with us, to speak with us, to share with us your thoughts on all the great stuff that we have covered so far. We've got a great hour straight ahead. When we get back from the top of the hour break, one of the stories that just continues to percolate, and we've got to talk about it, is this notion of woke education. Critical race theory, woke education, all these stories are folding into one as part of a narrative. And there's a very important distinction that needs to be made within this narrative. And it's the role of teachers. And no, it's not the way you think. Because it's easy to take a broad brush and blame everybody in education. The reality is the frontline teachers are as miserable about this as many of us are. They don't want to have to teach this, and they're starting to push back. And we'll give you some details on that, plus take your phone calls, and a whole lot more straight ahead. I'm Brett Winterble. This is the EIB Network. It is wonderful to be here with you. Hour number two of the Rush Limbaugh Show, now underway on the EIB Network. And we pivot over toward the discussion that's ongoing throughout our entire country regarding critical race theory and what's happening in our education system. Woke education. Some teachers are pushing back against critical race theory, but many are afraid to speak up for fear of losing their jobs. One teacher that's not afraid is Lilith Venetian. She's a teacher from Fairfax County, Virginia. And she was on Fox's America's Newsroom with Dana Perito and argued that the call for equity and inclusiveness is really one-sided.
One-sided. They talk about the anti-bullying initiative and love is welcome here. And it seems to me that they always talk about equity and inclusion, but it's only including those that have a specific mindset. So we're not including conservative students, we're not including conservative teachers and parents, but we're only inclusive with those that are divisive, those that don't want the best for their children, those that don't want the best for the school board and the best for the future of this country. So they might be screeching from the rooftops that they're all about inclusivity, but they're really not. And that's very, very obvious in these school board meetings.
It's one of the challenges that's out there. We talked about it earlier in the week with the revelations coming out of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School District in North Carolina and how it was they're doing social justice homeroom curriculum. And those social justice homeroom programs haven't been vetted by parents, haven't been looked at by parents. And in fact, one principal, Jamie Brooks, who's the principal of Ardrey Kell High School there, says, you know, essentially on the record, you don't get to opt out of social justice. And the parents don't get to come in here and tell us what we're going to teach. That is a fundamentally broken system because the teachers have now been put in the unenviable position of being people who must deliver an ideologically skewed educational regimen, even if that regimen doesn't match not just their own values, you can set that aside, but doesn't match strong, basic, critical thinking and teaching skills. We talk about inclusivity, but it may in fact not be inclusive and is likely not inclusive and is many times not inclusive. And yet the teachers have to parrot those talking points, those lesson plans to the students or face, well, we know what they are going to face. They're going to face being ostracized. They're going to be face being put out of a job, all those sorts of things. Now, outside of getting an education, why do we go to school? We go to school to prepare for entering the workforce. Well, Rusty Reno is editor of First Things magazine, wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal titled "Why I Stopped Hiring Ivy League Graduates," in which he shares some troubling observations that he's made about the impacts of woke education. He was talking to Fox's Steve Doocy about just a few of them. Here he goes.
Now I'm seeing these young people that they have, to be frank, a kind of distorted view of reality. I mean, pronouns, worrying about pronouns. I mean, how can you get work done if everybody's tiptoeing around the office worried about, you know, triggering someone? There's a kind of weird combination of arrogance and conformism in these kids. And it's the conformism that's new. I mean, they acquiesce to the woke culture, and it's what I call a spirit of surrender.
You know, Rush talked about a movie a few years back in 2019, called No Safe Spaces. That talked about how identity politics are eroding free speech in America. Here's Rush.
I wanted to call your attention. We just ran a spot for a movie. It's 200 screens nationwide. It's from MJM Entertainment Group. It's called No Safe Spaces, and it is a chilling, chilling expose of the left's assault on free speech and freedom and political correctness, some violence attached to it. It is designed to awaken people to the actual intentions of people you may think are just Democrats, or they may just be liberals. The people that this movie exposes and the actual events that it highlights are chilling. College campuses and work. So keep a sharp eye if this movie is anywhere near where you live, a theater. It's not The Mandalorian. It's not Star Wars. It's none of that. It's a serious attempt at exposing the rot permeating our culture called No Safe Spaces.
And how ironic he mentions The Mandalorian, which featured a very famous actress who was canceled for the position she took. And when you look at the way this now translates out into the broader community, you see a couple of different moving pieces. You see teachers that feel like they've been put upon and forced to teach this. And then you have teachers who say, you know what, enough is enough. I'm not doing this. I choose not to do this. One of the most elite schools in the tri-state area, that's the area around New York City, is the Dwight Englewood School. It's close to Manhattan. It's one of these $52,000 a year private school institutions. And an English teacher has now resigned her position at this exclusive private school in objection to the prevalence of what she is calling regressive and illiberal orthodoxies associated with critical race theory. Illiberal and regressive. Dwight Englewood School, stunted learning and placed, quote, ideological blinders on students by teaching them that women and racial minorities are oppressed by default. That's the teacher, Dana Stengel-Plow. The school's ideology requires students to see themselves not as individuals, but as representatives of a group, forcing them to adopt the status of privilege or victimhood. Stengel-Plow wrote in a resignation letter to school leaders and her fellow English department teachers, "As a result, students arrive in my classroom accepting this theory of fact. People born with less melanin in their skin are oppressors. People born with more melanin in their skin are oppressed. Men are oppressors. Women are oppressed. She said it in a letter posted online by the Foundation Against Racism and Intolerance, an organization seeking to bring about a world in which we are all judged by the content of our character, not by the color of our skin. By the way, that lesson would probably be outlawed in the current climate. Martin Luther King Jr.'s warning and desire would just be considered, well, a little too outdated in the minds of these amazing progressives. One of the things we need to understand is this doesn't happen in a vacuum. There's a survivor of Mao's China who has stunned a school board with a chilling warning about critical race theory. Virginia seems to be a real hotbed for this fight. Loudoun County, Virginia, is where this story is out of. A Chinese woman who suffered under the brutal communist Chinese regime of Mao Zedong vehemently denounced Loudoun County School Board in Virginia for its championing of critical race theory, charging, "All of this seems very familiar. The only difference is they used class instead of race." This is indeed the American version of the Chinese Cultural Revolution. This is out of the Daily Wire. Given 1 minute to speak, the Chinese woman wasted no time in getting to the point, asserting, "I've been very alarmed by what's going on in our schools. You're now training our children to be social justice warriors and to loathe our country and our history. Growing up in Mao's China, all of this seems very familiar. The communist regime used the same critical theory to divide people. The only difference is they used class instead of race." How do you think she was received? Standing ovation or dismissed? Is she not considered somebody who would be in an oppressed class? Somebody who had to escape the viciousness of Mao Zedong's communism? A woman who is of Chinese heritage? Certainly you would want to give her extra consideration if you're a woke progressive, but no, you can't do that. You can't do that. Because it runs counter to the narrative. All you have to do is look at Silicon Valley and look at the way the big tech companies get on their hands and knees and bow down to the Chinese Communist Party and to Xi Jinping. And what is it that the Chinese Communist Party instituted just in this recent series of years? They instituted the social credit system, having nothing to do with credit cards, monetary freedom. Social credit means measuring you by the positions you take, your opinions, and your desire or lack of desire to toe the line of the party. Is that not what you're seeing taking place with big tech here in the United States? Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, what have you, where you are canceled for expressing and espousing an unpopular position? The dream of the big tech is to adopt that social credit system right here in the United States, and they can control what job you have, what travel you can take, what experiences you may enjoy, and how it is you might move up the ladder. As she says, race is what's being utilized here. Class is what was utilized in China. And at the end of the day, it is about control. I'm Brett Witterbull, your guide host today on the Rush Limbaugh Show on the EIB Network. Brett Witterbull, your guide host today on the EIB Network. Now, you can go from school to the workplace with the sort of things that we're talking about. It's not just limited to what's going on in schools, in colleges, in any of these places. The workplace is doing this as well. Lockheed Martin defending employees attending training to address white culture. Aerospace and defense company Lockheed Martin acknowledged that thousands of its employees have gone through training courses to bring awareness to white male culture, including a three-day white men's caucus in 2020 attended by 13 employees. company sent responses to Arkansas Republican Senator Tom Cotton, who heard about the training sessions for white employees and requested additional information. In its letter to Cotton, Lockheed Martin said, hey, the intended audience of the training sessions are Caucasian male executive leaders based on level and position. The training is mandatory for company leaders, 1,024 of them, who have been put through this since 2007. As previously reported by Fox Business, the training sessions aim to bring awareness to white male culture and its impact on the company as a whole. So you have this this program that's put into place. You are mandating training for white male executives. The training course for the white male executives is one of three in a larger program, the company said, which also include women and people of color. Tom Cotton said in an emailed statement on Tuesday that he was disappointed to learn the company is forcing employees to undergo training sessions. North Carolina representative Dan Bishop responded to the initial reports last month by saying that corporations that divide their employees by race should not receive taxpayer dollars. Well, it's one thing for the Congress to say that, but you've got a president at the top of this who has told us that the most important issue facing us in the United States is systemic racism or climate change or systemic racism and climate change or systemically racist climate change or any of those sorts of things. But he told us 2 weeks ago that the number one threat to America is white supremacy. And that's the hard truth. Let me go back out on the telephones. Let me go to Joseph in Boston, Massachusetts. Joseph, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Second time caller. I only got through a long time ago when I spoke with Rush, and he was very nice. And I'd like to compliment first your screener. He's very nice.
Very nice.
I've heard, and you're very nice. You don't always agree, but you can, you know, disagree and agree and have a discussion. I wanted to talk first about the podcast. And then if you let me, I'd like to briefly mention that woke thing you mentioned. That's horrible. The podcast, when I heard the podcast of Rush, why is it that some people like to go to war with the callers? That's what Bo was talking to, and Sean Hannity. He said he couldn't believe it that his screener would go to war with the callers. To me, that doesn't serve a purpose. What's your take on that?
Well, here's the thing that I would say, because I was a screener for this program for a lot of years. I was in there from 99 to about 2006. And I think it's a term that ought not to be taken completely literally. I mean, you're not really going to war. But when you are the screener of a program as high profile as Rush Limbaugh's show or Sean's show or any other program out there, your duty is to find interesting, compelling callers that are going to get on the air and be entertaining, engaging, compelling to the audience and to the host. Because remember, this is about entertaining and informing the audience and keeping them listening in. So you want to find callers that are on point, that are talking about what the topic is at that given moment or has been in the last number of minutes. You want to make sure that they have a position that isn't the same old claptrap and talking points that you're hearing on all the cable news channels. There are people who are going to engage on the issue and not just get on the air and personally attack the host. And they can't be boring. You want them to have a little bit of spark, a little bit of energy, a little bit of entertainment value that they're going to bring. But they've also got to be able to defend if they're going to challenge a host and they're going to make an assertion. When that host responds, you would hope that caller would then have a good response that the host can then develop a dialogue off of. Think of it as playing tennis. You hit the ball, they hit the ball. You hit the ball, they hit the ball. Now, if a screener of a program is going to go to war or is going to fight callers, well, you're either going to wear the callers out and they're going to hang up, or you're going to find yourself in a position where the host is going to say, who is that you've been talking to for 25 minutes, and why are you so animated, and why are you yelling and screaming, and why haven't you put them on the air with me yet? And that's really what it comes down to. There is a percentage of callers who will call the show and they are excited and happy just to get on. They'll just be like, hey, I'm on. What do you want me to say? And you go, that's not the point of being the caller. The caller must make the host look good. Rush's rule number one. Number two, you're going to have a percentage of callers that are jerks, that are going to call and say, you're a this, you're a that, you know what they're going to say. I mean, you've heard it over the years. That is not productive radio. And nobody really wants to talk to somebody who gets on and says, hello, jerk, or anything like that. So that's going to wipe you out of the box. So it leaves you with a group of people who are interesting, informed, especially if you're on the other side. Now, if somebody calls in and says, Brett, you're dead wrong about Keystone XL pipeline. You're dead wrong about climate change. You're dead wrong about this or that. I'm going to say, great, I want to take that call next because we're going to have a discussion, a conversation. But if you're going to call the show and be a bore or be boring, that's not going to work. And so it is a fine art. What happens when you are the screener of a radio program, whether it's sports talk, whether it's news talk, you are looking for interesting people who can come on, people who can speak cogently, who the audience can understand. That's really what it comes down to. And the caller has a great deal of responsibility because I can personally attest on behalf of all the screeners of America. I don't think that was ever an organization, but I can say on behalf of the screeners of America, one of the hardest things to do is to sit there when that caller crashes and burns, and you know the host feels very, very bummed about what you just did. And you take that home with you and you think about it. And much like a quarterback throwing interceptions, you will lay in bed at night replaying calls saying, why? Why did I put Steve, Joe, Mark, Jenny, Bill on the air? I'll remember that voice. And it won't happen again. It's a very dramatic moment that emerges in your mind. And it's a learning experience. Now, all that being said, a truly terrible, awful, legendary, down in flames, what the heck was that? We need to check and find out what just occurred. Can we replay it? I don't know what he said. Did he say that? I think he said that. What did he mean? What show was he listening to? That is pure, unadulterated gold. One of those calls that becomes so legendary that in a best of episode, your producer says, we got to go find that nut that called in and said this. That's great stuff. I don't care how you slice it. People love that. That gets tongues wagging, too. Appreciate the call. I'm Brett Winterble on the EIB Network. I appreciate being here today with all of you, and it is a real pleasure and honor to be here at the EIB Northern Command. I'm looking across the glass at some of the amazing people that make this show what it is. One of the people that makes radio what it is today is the Fouch. I got to be honest with you. The Fouch, Anthony Fauci, Tony Fauci. He and his belief in Fauchism, he's an incredible guy. He's able to convey so many messages at the same time that leaves you not just confused, but also filled with wonderment at how he's able to get them. Tony Fauci has essentially come out and said, if you attack me, you're attacking science. Wow. Wow. Now, that is incredible when you really think about this. Who knew that Tony Fauci was science? I get being a scientist that you disagree with, but when you're attacking me, you're attacking science? Senators Tom Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, and Marco Rubio, Republican of Florida, as well as one of the great senators out there, Marsha Blackburn, Republican from Tennessee, are calling for Tony Fauci's resignation, claiming that he has lost the confidence of the American people. If Fauci will not resign, the senators are demanding President Biden fire him amid a controversy over the origins of COVID. That after Fauci and others had dismissed the lab leak theory as a right-wing conspiracy theory. Last night on the Fox News Channel's Hannity show, Senator John Kennedy, Republican from Louisiana, said this about Dr. Fauci.
I know Dr. Fauci. I like Dr. Fauci. I respect Dr. Fauci. But Dr. Fauci needs to cut the crap. This isn't about Dr. Fauci. It's not about his feelings. And I'm sorry if his feelings were hurt. You know, maybe he ought to buy an emotional support pony. But we're not debating dance moves on TikTok here. We're talking about millions of human lives.
Now, this has been a tough week for Tony Fauci, because when we opened up on Monday here on the Rush Limbaugh Show, We played some amazing sound of Tony Fauci getting roasted by former President Trump, in which he said Tony Fauci loves the masks. He could wear one mask, two masks, or three masks, then put goggles on and wear it for the next 5 or 6 years. That was what former President Trump said about Anthony Fauci. So I have no doubt that Anthony Fauci is in the midst of a lot of stress and pressure. He's getting it from every possible direction. But so much of it is of his own making. Wear a mask, don't wear a mask, socially distance, don't socially distance. You're crazy if you think that this came from a lab leak. There's no reason to doubt the efficacy and the ethics of the Chinese communist scientists. He's willing to go to bat for everybody but the American people. You don't hear him go to bat specifically for the American people. And I think what's getting to Tony Fauci is the fact that you've got a situation brewing where his necessity is starting to unwind. You get to a crisis. Who's going to save us? Superman shows up. Okay, I'm not saying Fauci's Superman, but I'm saying Superman shows up to save the day. What happens? He stops the meteor from attacking the Earth and sends it out into orbit. And what does Superman do? He then moves on down the road to the next challenge. Fauci has been on the payroll forever. He's been the front and center guy on the NIH since the 1980s. They celebrate him. They celebrated him in the movie, and the band played on as the guy who was the reason why we were able to get a handle on HIV and AIDS. He's been celebrated as a hero. In fact, so effective is Tony Fauci at being the hero of heroes is that he's the highest paid federal employee, the highest paid federal employee in the federal government is Anthony Fauci. You know what his base pay is? $417,000 a year. It's a reason Tony Fauci doesn't want to resign. There is a big reason, because that is a very big gravy train coming down the line. And he believes he's the guy that got a handle on the coronavirus. So in essence, Tony Fauci is an unelected politician who has a phony baloney job making a ton of money that he doesn't want to walk away from. And when he comes out and says, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I am Tony Fauci. And when you attack Tony Fauci, you're attacking the science. You got to get the hook. You got to say to him, listen, head on down the road. One of the things he sold for a very long time was, of course, and we all remember, it was getting your vaccine. Get the vaccination numbers up. We got to get those vaccines in there. We got to get that done. Washington State does what it does best. It encourages drug use. That's right. Washington State offering joints for jabs. Joints for jabs to boost people participating in the vaccination programs to fight COVID-19. How does it work? Simple. To boost vaccination rates, Washington State is offering free marijuana joints to any adults that receive a COVID-19 vaccine. On Monday, Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board announced the promotion aptly called Joints for Jabs. That will run until July 12th. During the initiative's run, state-licensed dispensaries can give age-appropriate customers, 21 and older, a pre-rolled joint when they receive their first or second dose. That's not fair. If it's a two-dose deal, that's two shots. That's two jabs. Why don't you get two joints? Suddenly it becomes a Sublime song. I mean, I don't understand why we're still trying to incentivize with bad habits people who are trying to get healthier and not get the coronavirus. It doesn't make any sense to me. The state of Washington is essentially bribing this. Rush would have had a field day with the notion of joints for jabs and jabs for joints. And how do you make the decision on what you go first with? Joints for jabs or jabs for joints? You do the jab, then you get the joint, or you get the joint because you did the jab. These are the things that have to be focus group and tested with a large budget and some kind of a mock-up board. You got to have the mock-up board. You got to have psychedelic coloring and letters, perhaps a Doors song attached to it, or something from the dead. It is Washington. It could be Nirvana. I don't know. But I'm looking at this and I'm saying to myself, self, are we really going to have people do this? Meanwhile, We've been throwing out money as fast as we possibly can. Criminals may have stolen as much as half of the unemployment benefits that the United States has been pumping out over the past year, probably to buy joints. Why does this matter? Unemployment fraud during the pandemic could easily reach $400 billion. That's according to some estimates. And the bulk of the money, it likely ended up in the hands of foreign crime syndicates, making this not just theft, but a matter of national security. This is incredible. This is the sort of thing that we warned about. We, as conservatives, warned about the idea of just throwing money out there to people. Stimulus money. Now they don't want to go to work. Unemployment money. Where's it going? Foreign syndicates. That's great. $400 billion? $400 billion? In fraud, in losses. And nobody's going to be responsible for this. Yet again, you're going to hear that the system failed, that the system came up short. The system has fraud built into it as a part of a pad. Isn't it great to do business with straightforward people? Isn't it great not to have to worry about the government shoveling all this money out there, criminals taking advantage of it? I want integrity. I want to work with people that are going to be there for me and do what it is that they say they're going to do. You know, in these times, there's a lot of questions out there in terms of what it is that you're trying to do, how it is you're trying to get stuff done. Well, listen, for example, if you're interested in refinancing your mortgage, be in touch with the leader that Rush recommended to us, American Financing. This is the company that puts your needs first. American Financing is a family-owned mortgage lender that customizes loans for both new home purchases and refinances. Depending on your situation, you could save hundreds, if not thousands, a month. Rush has all the details.
As a homeowner, one of the activities you don't want to miss out on is accessing lower interest mortgage rates, because a lower rate can mean hundreds of dollars in monthly savings. That's tens of thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. So please make today the day you call American Financing and get the refinance process started. Now, you'll work with a dedicated mortgage consultant, someone who's going to guide you through the custom loans, helping you pick the right option to achieve your goals without any pressure. No upfront or hidden fees either, because they only want what's best for you.
Here's what you do. This is important. Start saving on your mortgage by calling American Financing. Here's the phone number Rush always shared with you, 800-795-1210. That's 800-795-1210. Or visit AmericanFinancing.net. NMLS 182334. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org. Plenty more straight ahead on The Rush Limbaugh Show on the EIB Network. It is The Rush Limbaugh Show on the EIB Network. I am your guide host today, Brett Witterbull, taking a look at another story that turns out to be not what the media told you it was. I mean, my gosh, you can just do this for hours and hours on end. It's incredible. The media got it wrong again, this time on the Trump Bible photo op at Lafayette Park in front of St. John's Church. Remember when they were claiming that, well, this was all just a photo op that the president was doing? He wanted to clear the park of protesters, invoke an injustice so that he could get over there and just get a quick photo op in. That's not what happened at all. Is the media ever right about these sorts of things? Turns out that last summer, the U.S. Park Police, and this is as a result of an investigation by an inspector general, did not clear racial injustice protesters from Lafayette Park to allow for then-President Donald Trump's march to St. John's Church last June. So the protesters are out there, they're carrying on. All of a sudden, the park gets cleared. The protesters are being pushed out. They're heading on down the road. They're angry. They feel left out. They feel like their First Amendment rights have been violated. And the narrative becomes, that was so that Donald Trump could take a Bible for a photo op. That's what he was doing. No, in fact, the U.S. Park Police cleared the park to allow a contractor to install a fence safely around the White House. That's according to a new Inspector General's report. I mean, this is the definition of the drive-by media. Here's Rush explaining the drive-by media.
People still say, Rush, what's drive-by media? It's very simple. What happens in a drive-by? You're at a stoplight or something. A bunch of hoodlums drive up and start shooting you, shooting the people in the car. What they do? Create the mess and drive on down the road, waiting to do it again. That's the media arriving at any story. They show up at any story, make a total mess of it. Maybe even get some people killed or get some people wounded, and then head on back down the road, drive right on by, and do it all over again.
Now, the thing that is just so incredibly ironic about this story is, why are the U.S. Park Police having to put up a fence around the White House? It's because there were attempts to breach that perimeter last summer. And at that point, the media was all agaga saying, oh, did you see what happened? Did you see what happened? They had to take Trump and take him down to the secure part of the White House because there was a possibility that there was going to be a breach. The park would never have been cleared had those fences been attempted to be breached by those racial injustice protesters in Lafayette Park. So the whole reason why it got cleared was because of your behaviors outside the White House, and it was a security concern. You know what I think is interesting? You can do an A-B comparison and say, wow, okay, the U.S. Park Police acted in a proactive fashion to protect the White House. What did they do over there at the Capitol? Well, they just don't know. They just know the system failed. Going to go on the phones next up to Chuck. Chuck in Waverly, Tennessee. Welcome to the Rush Limbaugh Show, Chuck.
Yes, I'm glad to talk to you. I've been trying to get through for months.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I have a numerous amount of questions.
Oh, my gosh.
Number one, how the hell does Bojo get to shut down the pipeline? It ain't his. It's private property. What the hell gives him the authority to do that?
Okay, let me answer that question. That's a big question. You want to know how Bojo, well, you call him Bojo? Is that the nickname for Biden, I guess, is what he's saying, because Biden is shutting down the Keystone XL pipeline. How he does it is he refuses to allow the permit to continue because it's federal land. So once you've got this permit in place, the president can pull that permit because he's in charge of allowing what goes on there via essentially an executive order. And so he came out and he said, you know what, we're not going to allow you to run your pipeline through this piece of federal land. And without any alternative way to get that pipeline built, moved, redirected, the project is killed. I mean, this is a White House that has inside the administration hundreds of people with a great deal of experience when it comes to killing off perfectly good jobs in the private sector. This is a group of people who were responsible for killing off lots and lots of jobs when they took over healthcare. But the problem remains our energy independence and the people who were reliant upon the jobs attached to the Keystone XL pipeline continue to be left out in the cold. And the party that tells you they're the party of the little guy is, in fact, the party of the big special interest climate change mafia, essentially. And they're saying, look, we're going to go with the green folk. We're going to go where the green is, and we're going to leave you green with envy as you watch your businesses die. I'm Brett Winterbull, your guide host today on the EIB Network. It is the Rush Limbaugh Show on the EIB Network. I am your guide host today, Brett Winterbull. Happy to be here with you, 800-282-2882. It's a number to be a part of the conversation. We go out to Ocean Park, Washington with Mierica. Hello, Mierica. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thank you so much for the blessing for me to be on your phone. My name is Mierica Lopez, and I came to the United States of America legally with my family on August 11th, 1971.
Awesome.
For freedom, I like to share that the minute that the United States of America removed the Pledge of Allegiance from our schools, that's when everything went downhill, sir. The woke generation that you say now is not woke. They are basically the opposite.
Mm-hmm. They are.
Not a woke movement.
No, it's not a woke movement. It's a closed-minded movement that is about control. And the trouble with revolutions is they turn inward on themselves over time. Nobody is pure enough for the ideology. Nobody has that corner, and they become more and more and more extreme over time until eventually these things collapse of their own weight. And the antidote to that is knowing that this is a great country worthy of defense in the intellectual, spiritual, and temporal sphere. And we have to understand that we must stand up for America and our values on the EIB Network. How surprised were you when you saw Kamala Harris, the Vice President of the United States, declare that her trip had been a success going to Central America and Mexico? That it was a success. It was a successful trip. Nobody thought it was a successful trip. In fact, inside the White House, there's chattering going on that she kind of blew it. That it really wasn't a good look to sit there with Lester Holt when he asks you about when it is you're going to go to the southern border, and you laugh and you say, well, I haven't been to Europe either. And it was a very, very uncomfortable number of days that we watched play out from the Sunday night departure that was an error, because they had to take Air Force Two and bring it back and put a different flight up because they had a mechanical difficulty. But really, from the jump, this thing was not a successful trip. The president of Guatemala couldn't have been more unhappy with the vice president of the United States and the president of the United States for doing what they did by reversing the Trump order. And by creating this flow of illegal migrants up towards the United States, bringing people through his country, pulling people who have skills out of his country, sending them northward to the United States. President Giamatei was not happy. President Oprez Lobrador was not happy either in Mexico. They were furious. And no one is happy with the work this week of Kamala Harris on her trip. In Kamala Harris, we've not even seen her provide a good solution to a problem. And while it's easy to say, give her time, she's only been VP for less than 6 months. Consider how long she's been in the mode of wanting to be president and then vice president, and how poorly she did in the primary process. She dropped out early because she couldn't figure out how to get it done in Iowa. If you can't figure that out, then how do you expect her to figure out a real problem like our border security? Why does Iowa matter? Well, if you go back to Barack Obama's ability to plug in with the people of Iowa during the caucuses, and if you go back to the successful presidents who have come out of Iowa, it's because they have connected with the people of that state in a way that said, okay, we get you. You get us. This is great. Kamala Harris doesn't have that skill set. She doesn't know how to manage border security. She has years of problems and plenty of Teflon coating. Things just don't stick to her. In fact, Rush talked about Kamala Harris and how Kamala Harris can't make you successful.
I was rereading today part of the speech that Kamala Harris gave when she announced her presidential campaign, because there's a controversy about it. Apparently, she has, as one of her big supporters is Herbalife, and as Attorney General of California, she gave them a pass in prosecuting them for things or ignoring them in instances where they should have been investigated because they're donors. So in the course of this story, I ran across this little paragraph. At a rally in late January in her native Oakland, California, U.S. Senator Kamala Harris announced her intention to seek the presidential nomination by casting herself as a tireless advocate of men and women who lack power and wealth. So if you're a person out there who thinks you have no power, and if you don't have any money, then you hear somebody like Kamala Harris and it inspires you. I'm going to support this woman. I'm going to support Kamala Harris because she's going to be looking out for me. She's going to make sure I have some power, and she's going to make sure I have some wealth. Well, sorry, but she can't. There is not And listen to me very carefully here, all of you. There is not a politician in this country who can make you wealthy and successful unless you're already there and give them some money and then they can grease skids for you as lobbyists or as corporate donors. But you, the people she's talking about, the invisible, faceless, great unwashed, with no money and no power, sorry, Kamala Harris can't do a thing for you. She can't make you rich. She can't somehow magically confer power on you. You know what she'll do? She will punish those who are rich and who are powerful to make you think she's looking out for you. But she's not going to do anything for you because she can't. There's not a single politician in the world that can make you a success. There's not a single politician in the world who can make you powerful. Guess who can do that? You. You are the only one who can do that. And you have to work for it. Still, the old recipes apply. She's never going to meet these people that she's claiming to represent, claiming to look out for. What she's going to do is continually complain and moan and whine and attack people who already have wealth and who already have power, and she's going to blame them for the fact that you don't have any of either. And then she's going to tell you that she's going to tax them, she's going to punish them, she's going to do things to make their lives a little tougher, and that's supposed to make you think she's looking out for you. But after she does all that, you are not going to have a penny more than you had when she started. And you're not going to have an ounce more power than you had. This is a traditional liberal political trick. I'm going to focus on the powerless and the vulnerable and the poor. Well, the Democrat Party's been doing this my whole life. And the people that they've been claiming that they're going to help and lift up are still complaining after 50 years. The people the Democrats represent are still complaining about not being rich, not having power, still being discriminated against, still being mistreated, still being ignored. Democrat Party isn't doing anything for them except talking a good game and getting their votes.
So let's look at the real perilous lesson that comes off of this failed trip. Because Kamala Harris, Vice President Harris, essentially was going down to Central America to promise $4 billion in money going to Guatemala and the Northern Triangle countries, as they call them. How do you mess that up? How do you go to a country like Guatemala with $4 billion in a satchel, hypothetically speaking or rhetorically speaking, and say to the president, I'm going to give you, president of Guatemala, we're going to give you $4 billion so that we can help kind of work through this issue that you're having with the migrant movement and all that sort of stuff. How do you mess that up? You end up coming away after promising $4 billion and the president of Guatemala is mad at you. And he's not one of these guys. He doesn't strike me as a guy who's mad that, like, she didn't give him enough money. Her and President Biden changed the executive orders and created the migrant flow. Because remember, it's an important lesson. You've got four, five, six countries that are part of that Northern Triangle zone, including Mexico. You expand it out to go through all of Central America and to go into the Caribbean. You've got 35 countries. There are people coming from all over the world through Mexico, through Central America, to sneak into the United States. That's a big deal. And the big deal for the Biden administration is this. He publicly tasked her at Tulsa, talking about the battle against white supremacy and systemic racism. He specifically tasked her with passing that Voting Rights Act bill that is radioactive right now. 800 pages, a federal task force will weigh in on whether or not a state can change congressional districts. They're going to pay candidates to run for office. This is a disaster when you throw in the fact that they're going to kill off voter ID. And President Biden said to Vice President Harris, Kamala, I want you to get this thing across that goal line. I want you to score that winning touchdown and get this thing passed. She doesn't know how to do that. a simple examination of her legislative record since she's been in the Senate indicates she's never passed a single bill. She's never had a bill passed into law. She's like 0 for 150. She's never had a bill passed into law. She doesn't have the relationships across the aisle to pass legislation. Why does that matter? She doesn't have relationships across the aisle to sell this Voting Rights Act. So not only can she not get poor people and powerless people money and power, she can't give $4 billion to Guatemala and say there's more of where that came from. If you play ball with me, Gia Matei's mad at her. The president of Mexico is mad at her. And now she's in charge of getting the voting bill passed. It's not going to happen. This is devastating. It's not 6 months into this administration. It's devastating for the Democrats. Because now, when the fear in February and March was, what happens if something happens to Joe? She's going to become the president. That fear is now present in a much more amplified way because she's gone out onto the public stage and been tested twice and came up short, which means if she were to ascend to the presidency, she will be not just an ineffective president, but somebody who's not liked by leaders around the world and her own constituents. Joe Biden went vintage Joe Biden when he picked Kamala Harris to be his VP. He can literally not get anything right. 800-282-2882. I am Brent Witterbull. I am your guide host today on the EIB Network. It is the Rush Limbaugh Show on the EIB Network. I'm Brent Witterbull. So I want to tell you something here. There's an incredible story to be heard in the latest episode of the podcast series, Rush Limbaugh, the man behind the golden EIB microphone. Sean Hannity is speaking with our Bo Snerdly, the host of the series of stories of what happened behind the scenes here on the EIB Network. Here's just a short example of Bo or James Golden talking with Sean.
Sean, I was in my garage and I get a phone call and my phone says, Sean Hannity. Oh, okay. And Sean Hannity says to me, listen, I don't know what your plans are and I don't know what you're doing, but whatever you're doing, you have to watch President Trump's address to the nation tonight. And I can't tell you why, but you have to watch it.
True story.
Yeah. And I'm like, wow.
I called you. I called Cookie. Everybody that needed to know, I said, do not miss it. In other words, I didn't want you to miss it live. And this is the Medal of Freedom.
Rush Limbaugh, thank you for your decades of tireless devotion to our country.
And they're talking about last year's State of the Union address by President Trump, of course, when Rush received the Medal of Freedom Award. Now, how did Sean Hannity know about it before many of us did? Well, it's worth your time to download and listen to this podcast, Rush Limbaugh, the man behind the golden EIB microphone. It's sponsored by both Tunnel to Towers Foundation and My Pillow. Let's return out to the telephones and check in with David from Wichita, Kansas. David, welcome to the Rush Limbaugh Show on the EIB Network.
Thank you very much. I have I want to let you know, President Biden says that America is a systemic country. If that is true, why do so many people still want to come to America? And my advice to the president is, if systemic racism is the biggest problem facing the country, why don't we suspend all immigration until that problem is fixed?
Okay, that's a couple of very interesting takes you have there. So let's unpack them in reverse. What they will tell you is that they have the answer to systemic racism, and it's going to be more government programs, more funding, more training, more orders, executive orders, and things like that. Because the answer, when you When you are in government, the answer to every problem is more, is just government. It's more government. And the answer is just as plain as day. You need money and government, and that'll fix everything. So they would not acknowledge to you that it's an unfixable problem. They would say, no, 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 no. We will prove by opening the borders that we're not systemically racist. And by opening the borders, we will not be systemically racist then. And we will also be reforming a bunch of other institutions. There are billions of people on this planet that would love to come into the United States of America. They know that this is the beacon of freedom and opportunity. And sure, for a percentage of them, it's also a chance to get the hookup. When you find out that you're willing to throw $400 billion at unemployment issues and all sorts of things like that in waste, that represents a giant opportunity. And so when you think about America being this systemically racist thing, and what does Joe Biden really think about America? You have to understand that Joe Biden and the Democratic Party is going to look at these people coming into the United States not as people perfecting the union or people effecting a change to stop us from being systemically racist. It exists for two purposes. As I said, it exists to spend money and have more government involvement in your lives. But there's a second piece. It means votes. It means votes. And the shame of this is the Democrats have made a tremendous miscalculation when it comes to the idea of voting in America, because they believe that a winning issue, especially in the Hispanic community, and I could throw the phones open to people who live in, quote, the Hispanic community at 800-282-2882 and ask them if this is the right gamble, and they'll tell you no. They are convinced that, of course, people who are Hispanic or Latino or have emigrated from countries in Central America, South America, the Caribbean, Spain, Portugal, what have you, of course, these people are totally happy with an approach towards amnesty for people who broke into the country illegally. What they fail to realize by taking that position is that law and order cuts across ethnic, racial, and gender lines. Nobody wants to be unsafe. Nobody wants to see violence in their communities, on their streets. Nobody wants to see groups of people who maybe shouldn't be here, witness the old Trump executive order, remaining in this country so that America can prove that we're really not big meanies and awful and terrible. So the calculus they're using is, well, we'll get these votes and we'll win the Hispanic vote because we're pushing for amnesty for people who came into the country in an unauthorized or illegal fashion. And of course, the Hispanic community will embrace it. It will not. And what was seen in the aftermath of the 2020 election was that community was embracing Trump more than they had in the last number of elections. And they don't want amnesty. And they don't want unsafe streets. And they don't want social justice driving our law enforcement system, our legal system, and our system of keeping people safe. Nobody wants that. Nobody walks through a neighborhood and says, you know, this is a great neighborhood. You know what we need? We need to bring in a bunch of people whom we know nothing about, whom we have not vetted, whom we don't know if they're here legally or not, whom are just coming in to do their thing. No, people want an orderly process of immigration. That was the fake knock on President Trump, because he said, we're going to build a wall, but we're going to build huge doors and entry points so people can come in legally and properly. And people understood that. For all the Jorge Ramos wailing and gnashing of teeth that was going on television, the average voter understood what Trump was talking about. He wasn't talking about excluding people based on the color of their skin or their ethnic background. President Trump was advocating for opportunity in this country, this most special of places in the world, but based on a willingness to follow the rules to get in, to fill out the paperwork, to pay the fees, to do the process in an orderly way rather than simply gate crashing. I've used the analogy before. I'll use it again. Can you imagine going to a concert or a big event? You've laid out a few $100, maybe $500. You get to your seats and suddenly two people are sitting there. And when you ask the usher to remove them, the usher tells you, I'm sorry, they don't have tickets, but they deserve to be in those seats because of social justice. You would be furious. You should feel that way about the direction of your nation. You should feel that way about the orderly ingress of people coming in who want to be a part of America, doing it in a transparent, open, and honest way, rather than simply coming in under the dark of night in a dangerous frontier created by Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. I'm Brett Witterbull on the EIB Network. You know, Rush Limbaugh spoke the truth, and he understood the mainstream media so very well. Let me just give you one example of this.
Raymond in Potomac, Maryland. Nice to have you here, sir. Hello.
It's an absolute honor to speak with you, Rush.
Thank you.
Rush, I really worry about this media. They've become so blatant with their efforts to undermine our democracy. They seem to be more powerful than all of conservative talk radio, all of our elected Republicans in Congress, and President Bush combined.
No, they're not.
And Rush, why?
No, they're not. Wait a second. They are not. I must stop you. I know why you feel that way, but they are not. If our side... Sadly, we don't have it. So you might have a point. If we had some leadership on our side, they could be nullified. I'm talking about elected leadership at the party level. We don't have that right now. You go back and look at 1980s, Ronald Reagan rammed through practically everything he wanted and defeated the liberals' best friends in the world, the Soviet Union, without any friendly media except National Review magazine. It can be done. Even when they had their monopoly, it could be done.
Yep. I agree with that, Rush, but you got to remember, this is a different media now. Ever since Bill Clinton was in office, he unleashed a media that's now out undermining our democracy in ways that the media didn't do under the Reagan administration.
Yes, they did. They have always done it. They have. How old are you?
I'm 45.
45. Well, you're old enough to remember. The media, and you have to go back to the Kennedy era and start forward. But even after World War II, during the FDR administration, this media has been sycophantic and in the tank. They have been liberals, and they have had an agenda. They always go back to what they did to Richard Nixon. I mean, there's really nothing new. The only thing that's really new now, and this is what you are perceiving, back in those days, they would deny the allegation that they were liberal or had an agenda. Today, they don't care to deny it so much, and they're much more blatant about it. But it's always been there. They're smaller. Their newspapers are losing circulation. Newspapers are losing advertising revenue. Their television outlets, their nightly newscasts are losing viewers. Take a look at the advertising on the nightly newscast. It's Preparation H stuff. It's people that don't have computers and don't test, you know, pay attention to news during the day. Yep. They have an aging, elderly demographic that reads newspapers and so forth. So the progress is being made here. I don't want you to get depressed on this.
Well, I agree with that, Rush, but still, at the same time, you got to look. They're increasing. You're the person that gives the truth on the radio every day, and we all know that. If the mainstream media was given the same truth that all of conservative talk radio is doing, which they're supposed to do because they're journalists with the charge, with the incredible honor and importance of giving the truth to the people. You guys are just entertainers. You don't have to give the truth. If they were giving the same truth you were, Rush, these liberals that are controlling the Democrat Party wouldn't even be in office. They couldn't be reelected. So the problem's the media. Why are you not leading charge to stop this media?
Well,
you're doing nothing.
Of course we're doing something. I'm losing you here. Of course the media. Where do you get the idea the media is supposed to be oriented in truth?
Rush, the founding fathers told us that we couldn't trust our elected officials. They gave the media constitutional protection.
But they didn't say anything about truth.
But they were the only private sector entity that was mentioned in the Constitution in order to be our watchdog.
They just said a free and open press. They didn't talk about the truth.
Rush.
Trying to help you understand here because your blood pressure is going up. The media has never been about the truth. The media is about balance. The media is about fairness, but it's not about truth. It's not even really about accuracy. It's not about truth. The drive-by media today is not about that. They're totally agenda-oriented, and they always have been. Media, journalism, attracts liberals because it is inexorably linked to government, and that's where liberals go. Liberals are trained to get their tentacles into every nook and cranny of government, control it for the rest of their lives. And media is considered to be an arm of government because the people in the media and the people
government, it's a revolving door. Chris Matthews used to work for Cuomo, used to work for Tip O'Neill. Now he's at NBC. It's a revolving door. There's no mystery about who they are, and their impact is blunted routinely. You wait. If it weren't, if there were no conservative talk radio, as you say, and if there were no alternative media, there would be no Reverend Wright controversy. Because Reverend Wright would not have found himself on television. He would not have found himself on TV. Nobody would know who he is. You wouldn't have had anybody willing to play the videos of Reverend Wright's sermons. Were it not for the internet, were it not for Fox News and a bunch of people who were first out with this stuff, it wouldn't have happened. Major, major, the Democrats are in a state of chaos and tumult here, as are the drive-by media. And they're not in good financial shape. CBS Evening News has got the lowest audience in its history since Edward R. Murrow was allowed to smoke cigarettes while on camera.
See, that's the best right there. That is Rush at his absolute best, throwing in that Edward R. Murrow smoking cigarettes on camera line, because that just locks you in. But remember what Rush did so effectively with the media. He played their clips at them and for them. He said, okay, here's what they said. Boom. This is nonsense. Before Rush came along in 88 on the national scene, what you had was a lot of people walking around saying, media is unfair, they're biased, they're terrible. Read my newsletter. Let me tell you again about how they're biased and how it's terrible and how it's awful. Rush did not feel any compunction throwing the spotlight on, watching them scatter and pointing them out and saying, this is what they said here. This is what really happened. This is what they did there. This is what really was meant. He understood them better than they understand themselves. And so when you look at these folks and you look at what they're doing, I mean, look, let me give you a good example. You're looking at CNN right now. Do you see who's sitting on CNN right now as we speak? Jeffrey Toobin is back. He was in Siberia. He was in Siberia, and they're bringing him back. So I guess we have to figure out whatever the number of months was that he was iced. Now he's back. Now, that is something that Rush would have pointed to and said, well, there you go. There's you know, you have cancel culture, and then you have disappear them culture and bring them back. The standards by which they expect you to live, me to live, us to live, conservatives to live, and the way they live are completely out of whack. It's like trying to understand those rules. You'll go crazy trying to do it. And that's what's so maddening about this whole situation. It's maddening. There's a lot of uncertainty out there. And you look at everything, everywhere you turn, you look at the uncertainty that's out there. And you say to yourself, now, hold on, how am I going to make sense of this? What does this mean? How does this happen? What is it that I've got to understand? The world is moving at an incredibly quick pace. And when you look at things like the Biden administration printing and spending money as if there are no consequences, talk about ignoring history. They're gambling with our future. What can you and I do to protect our savings and retirement from this unprecedented spending? You buy gold and silver, real gold and silver, the kind you can hold in your hands or have in your IRA. You learn how to do this from a company endorsed by the EIB network, the Oxford Gold Group. They've passed all of our tests on customer service, attention to detail, dealing honestly with you, and wanting to earn your business time and time again by doing all those things correctly. Just call them at 833-404-GOLD. See for yourself. They will answer all of your questions and send you out their free investment guide. Protecting your retirement accounts with real gold or holding gold in your hand is easier than you think. The Oxford Gold Group will do all the work. Call the Oxford Gold Group at 833-404-GOLD today. Protect what you've earned with real gold and silver from the Oxford Gold Group. Call them today, 833-404-GOLD. That's 833-404-G-O-L-D. I'm Brett Winterbull, your guide host today on the EIB Network. And I am Brett Winterbull, your guide host today on the EIB Network. 800-282-2882 is the phone number. Be a part of our discussion here. We're hitting all kinds of different things, and it's great to be spending this time at the EIB Northern Command. EIB High Note today is about rallying together behind a coworker and the true meaning of team. When 18-year-old Timothy Harrison showed up for work at the Waffle House in Center Point, Alabama, on the day of his high school graduation, his manager asked him why he wasn't attending. He disclosed that he didn't have the proper dress clothes or money for a cap and gown or even a ride to the ceremony, which was across town. So his fellow employees quickly got into gear. Along with the help of diners who heard what was going on, they scrambled to get everything Harrison needed. He'd only been working there a couple of months and was moved by the outpouring of support.
I got people who want to see me succeed, so that kind of had me excited. I really never expected that for that to happen. It was the best feeling.
Just to see his face when he came out, like, that was priceless. You never know who you can touch or who you influence just by one simple gesture.
By one simple gesture, Shantana Blevins and Timothy Harrison would be brought together in a very special way. The story gets even better, though. Lawson State Community College got wind of what happened and offered Harrison a full scholarship, even covering his books, and he will start classes in the fall. You can see the whole story over at rushlimbaugh.com. What's incredible about this story, and takes me back a couple of days to the story about the homeless man outside the Outback Steakhouse who got the attention of a passerby who bought him a $100 card to buy food with. And when he went in there to buy the food, he was told by the manager of the Outback that, no, you keep that. I want to try to help you out. And that manager then turned around and found that man a way to get a job as a dishwasher, to get a leg up, to get him clothing, to get him cleaned up, to get him a hotel room to live in as he transitioned back into life from having lived on the streets. What do you see as the common tie between the Waffle House employees and the Outback Steakhouse employees? Can I tell you and be bluntly honest about this? The connection you see is these are working class people. These are regular people who get up and go to work. And the people that are going to Waffle House and the folks that are working at that Outback, those are what make this country so special. Those are the people that make this country special. These aren't elites at an Ivy League school going out and helping this young man. I'm not saying that they don't have it in their capacity to do it, but I'm saying it's not as likely that they'll run into somebody destitute in the case of the man at the Outback, or a kid who just doesn't have the resources to be able to go to his own high school graduation. They're not going to run across them at Harvard Yard or at Yale or Stanford or in any of the other elite institutions out there. You're just not going to run across those people. And if you do run across those people, you're going to keep your head down and look at your iPhone and just kind of proceed accordingly, because you don't want to be involved. See, for all the negativity that they try to throw at conservatives, conservative values are taking care of one another, loving one another, helping to provide for one another. This show has been testimony to that for decades. Helping out important charity causes, helping out people in need, making sure that we were working with people moving forward so that this would be a better place, a better country, a better world. It starts with the individual making an affirmative decision to try to improve the condition of another person's life instead of turning an eye. And yes, not to beat a dead horse and not to sound like a broken record, government handing money out is not compassion. That's not charity. It's redistribution. Charity is affirmatively choosing to help a person in need. That's charity. And using your resources to help them, doesn't necessarily have to be money. It can be access to help, it can be access to services, it can be access to a church. That's not mandated by the government. That's written on the heart by our Creator God, that we are to love one another and help one another and work with one another, regardless of race, creed, gender, what have you. Mercy and charity are enviable values and traits. We ought to crave more and more of it. We ought to do more and more of it. And here in this week, we have two amazing instances of average, ordinary Americans doing what's right just because it's right. God bless these people. I'm Brett Winterble, your guide host today on the EIB Network. Brett Winterble, your guide host today on the EIB Network. Thrilled to be here. Happy to be here. I'm going to take a little time for myself here. I'm going to take a little bit of time for myself. So I want you to listen up. This has been a remarkable journey for me. I'm sitting here in a studio with what I think is the best team of professionals that I've had the honor of working with. And it's 100% true. And I know they're all looking around trying to see who I'm talking about. But guys like Mike Maimone and Ali and Keith and of course, Joe and Greg and Craig, you know, it's been a remarkable journey because I came here to this team back in 1995 and I was with them, you know, on and off all these years. And I had the opportunity to come back and remember what Rush had done for me and to try to help out the team during this time period. And so to be able to come back here today and to be able to do this show in the EIB Studio Northern Command, where I had never done it, was a remarkable blessing and an opportunity. And I can't tell you how special these folks are, but you've heard the programming and you've heard the stuff that's out there, and it's all true. And I can't be more grateful for the opportunity that I've had here today. So to every one of you here on the EIB team in the Northern Command, thank you so much for hosting me here and for these last weeks. It has been the joy of my life. God bless you, Rush Limbaugh.